You're overwhelmed, distracted, always running, but never really arriving. You scroll through highlights of other people's lives, chase goals that don't feel like yours, and fill your days with noise just to avoid the silence. But beneath it all, something feels off, like your mind is working against you, like you're wasting your life on things that don't matter. That's not just burnout. It's a call to return to something real, something ancient, something powerful. Nearly 2,000 years ago, a Roman emperor named Marcus Aurelius wrote down thoughts, not for the world, but for himself. Quiet reflections on how to live, how to think, and how to stay grounded in a chaotic world. He faced betrayal, war, death, and still found peace within. And today, his words are not just relevant, they're essential, because we're not lacking information. We're lacking wisdom, focus, clarity, inner strength. In this episode, we'll explore 10 teachings from Marcus Aurelius that cut through the noise. Not as quotes to admire, but as tools to live by. Real, practical, timeless truths that can anchor your mind, reset your habits, and remind you of who you're capable of being. Let's begin. 1. Ignore what others are doing. You're not here to monitor everyone else's life. You're not here to compete with strangers or perform for an invisible audience. And yet, that's what most people do. Scroll endlessly, compare constantly, and measure their worth by the noise around them. It's subtle, almost invisible. You check someone's progress just out of curiosity. You see their success and feel a slight sense of urgency, even panic. Not because you failed, because they didn't. This is where focus dies, and Marcus Aurelius knew it. He reminded himself daily, "It is not the actions of others that trouble us, but our judgments about them. What others do is not your concern. Their achievements don't diminish yours. Their failures don't elevate you. Their path has nothing to do with your purpose. And yet, when you live through comparison, you start shifting, not just your attention, but your identity. You start chasing goals you never chose. You mimic habits that don't fit your nature. You lose yourself trying to become someone you were never meant to be. The modern world makes this worse. Social media has turned everyone into a curated product. You see their best moments, their filtered wins, their manufactured peace, and without noticing, you begin to question your own life. Am I doing enough? Why am I not where they are? But you're not seeing the struggle, the doubt, the mess behind the scenes. You're comparing your unfiltered truth to someone's highlight reel. That's not just unfair, it's destructive. Ignoring what others are doing doesn't mean becoming cold or self-absorbed. It means protecting your focus. It means refusing to let the noise of a million lives drown out the voice of your own purpose. Because every minute you spend watching someone else is a minute not spent building yourself. Marcus didn't have Instagram. He didn't need it. His battlefield was real, not digital. But even then, he warned himself not to be distracted by the lives of others, because distraction is timeless. It's the universal tool of procrastination. You say, "I'll check this one post, this one article, this one update." And suddenly, an hour is gone, not just from your schedule, but from your energy, your clarity, your drive. The Stoic path is narrow by design. It demands solitude, reflection, a sharp focus on what you can control, your thoughts, your actions, your responses. Everything else is noise, and noise kills progress. It kills identity. It keeps you spinning in circles, always watching, never creating. Ask yourself this: how much of your time today went into comparison? How often did you check what others were doing before deciding what you should do? How often did you let someone else's timeline shape your own? Your journey is not late. Your pace is not slow. Your results are not invalid. The only measure that matters is this. Are you becoming better than you were yesterday? Are you focused? Are you honest with yourself? Are you building something real or just consuming someone else's highlight reel? It's not easy to let go of comparison. It's addictive. But every time you pull away, every time you turn off the noise, you reclaim something sacred. Your attention, your energy, your ability to move deliberately through your own life. Not as a copy, but as the original. So today, unfollow a few voices. Log off for a while. Return to yourself. Not because you hate others, but because you love your focus more. Because peace doesn't come from knowing what everyone else is doing. It comes from knowing why you're doing what you're doing. And once you lock into that, nothing else matters. 2. Your reality is made by your opinions. The world doesn't hurt you. Your thoughts about the world do. That's not just philosophy. It's truth. What you feel isn't a reaction to reality itself, but to the meaning you've assigned it. Two people can face the same event. One breaks, the other builds. Why? Because of how they think. Because of how they choose to interpret what happened. Marcus Aurelius wrote, "If you are distressed by anything external, the pain is not due to the thing itself, but to your estimate of it. And this you have the power to revoke at any moment." This is one of the most liberating and confronting truths of Stoicism. It strips away your excuses. It doesn't let you blame the economy, your childhood, your past, or the people who mistreated you. Instead, it puts the spotlight back where it belongs, on your interpretation, on your judgment, on your perception. That might sound harsh. But it's also powerful, because if your reality is made by your opinions, then you are not trapped. You are not doomed by what happened to you. You are free, free to reframe, to grow, to see pain as fuel, not a cage. And once you realize that, you stop asking, "Why did this happen to me?" and start asking, "What can this teach me?" Think about your last frustration. Maybe someone insulted you. Maybe a plan failed. Maybe life didn't go your way. You felt anger, disappointment, maybe even shame. But pause for a moment. Was it the event that hurt you, or the meaning you attached to it? Was it truly the words, or your belief that those words defined you? Was it the failure itself, or your conclusion that failure makes you a failure? This is why the Stoics trained their minds like soldiers. Not to control the world, but to control their lens. They understood that everything that happens is raw material. It's our thinking that shapes it into suffering or strength. If someone insults you, you can decide it's proof of their weakness. If something goes wrong, you can decide it's a test of your resilience. If life breaks your plan, you can decide it's redirecting you toward something better. But this isn't positive thinking. This isn't delusion. This is clarity. This is mental discipline. The difference is that Stoicism doesn't ask you to pretend bad things are good. It teaches you to remain steady, no matter what they are. That's real power. In today's world, we are surrounded by opinions, ours and everyone else's, news headlines, online comments, social media algorithms that feed you negativity because they know it captures your attention. And if you're not careful, you'll begin to mistake those opinions for truth. You'll believe that the world is dangerous, hopeless, broken, that you're too late, that you're not enough. But all of that is just noise. And the more noise you consume, the more distorted your reality becomes. So, how do you reclaim control? You begin by questioning your thoughts, not believing everything you think, not reacting to every emotion as if it's gospel. You start asking, is this true? Is this useful? Is this helping me grow or keeping me stuck? And when the answer is no, you replace the thought. You reframe it. You reinterpret it over and over again until your mind is no longer a cage, but a compass. Marcus Aurelius didn't say these things from a place of comfort. He faced betrayal, illness, war, and death on a daily basis. But still, he chose to see life through a lens of clarity and calm. That's what gave him strength. Not power over others, but power over himself. You have that same power, right now, in this exact moment. No matter what you're facing, you can choose a thought that serves you. You can choose a story that empowers you. And the more you do it, the more natural it becomes. Until, one day, you wake up and realize that your world didn't change, but your experience of it did. And that's everything. So ask yourself, what meaning are you assigning to your pain, to your failure, to your uncertainty? Is it making you weaker or wiser? Because your opinions are not just commentary on your life, they are your life. And if you want to live better, start thinking better, not someday. Now, 3. Do less. Most people are exhausted not because they're doing too little, but because they're doing too much of what doesn't matter. They wake up already behind, fill their day with meaningless tasks, jump from one distraction to another, and wonder why they feel empty at night. They confuse motion with progress, but motion isn't meaning, noise isn't purpose, and busyness isn't growth. Marcus Aurelius, Emperor of Rome, ruled over millions, commanded armies, made life and death decisions, and still found time to reflect, write, and return to what truly mattered. He wrote, "If you seek tranquility, do less." Or, more accurately, do what's essential, which brings a double satisfaction, to do less, better. That's not just ancient wisdom. It's a survival guide for modern life. We live in a culture addicted to productivity. Every moment is supposed to be optimized, monetized, broadcast. If you're not constantly improving, hustling, growing, you're told you're falling behind. But behind what? Behind who? And most importantly, is any of it yours? When you're constantly moving, you lose clarity. You stop asking the most important question, why am I doing this at all? That's where Stoicism cuts deep. It doesn't just ask you to be productive, it asks you to be deliberate, to act from principle, not pressure, to eliminate what is non-essential so that the essential can actually breathe. Doing less isn't laziness, it's precision. It's an act of rebellion against the chaos that demands your attention, but gives you nothing in return. Every time you say yes to something meaningless, you say no to something meaningful. And the problem is, we rarely notice when we're doing it. We become so used to running on autopilot, answering every message, attending every meeting, responding to every notification, that we forget what it means to move with intention. So how do you break that pattern? You begin by slowing down, by stepping back, by auditing your life, not by what looks productive on the surface, but by what actually brings peace to your mind and strength to your character. You ask yourself, what if I stopped doing this? Would anything fall apart? And if the answer is no, then why is it still there? The Stoics teach that every action should serve your higher aim, not just your convenience, not just your ego, but your virtue, your discipline, your clarity, your peace. So cut the extra, the meetings that mean nothing, the projects that go nowhere, the obligations that were never truly yours. Instead of chasing more, master what already exists. Do fewer things, but do them with deeper presence. That's how true excellence is built. not through overwhelm, but through concentration. And when you live this way, something shifts. Your mind becomes clearer. Your energy becomes sharper. You stop reacting to everything around you and start acting from within. But this takes courage. It's easier to stay busy than it is to be still. Stillness forces you to face your real priorities. It strips away the illusion that you're progressing just because you're tired. Most people don't want to sit in that silence, because in that silence, you're left with the truth. Much of what you're doing doesn't matter. Doing less also means disappointing people, saying no, creating boundaries. Not everyone will understand why you've become more selective. Some will say you've changed, that you're selfish, that you've withdrawn. Let them. You're not here to be available to everyone. You're here to be aligned with your purpose. You don't need to explain. Your focus will speak for itself. And over time, this focus becomes your foundation. Your days no longer feel chaotic. Your decisions no longer feel rushed. You create space, not just in your schedule, but in your soul. Space to breathe, to reflect, to grow deliberately, not frantically. So ask yourself, what would happen if you stopped chasing every opportunity, if you said no more often, if you poured your full presence into one thing instead of dividing it across 20? You'd gain more than time. You'd gain power. Because in a world where everyone is scattered, the one who moves with clarity wins. 4. Death is knocking at your door. We live as if we're eternal. We scroll, argue, delay, waste hours on things we won't even remember next week, let alone at the end of our lives. We put off our dreams until later, assuming there's always more time. But the clock doesn't stop. Not for your excuses, not for your mood, not for your plans. Death is not a stranger waiting at the end of the road. It walks beside you, every step, every day, whether you acknowledge it or not. Marcus Aurelius wrote with haunting clarity, "You could leave life right now. Let that determine what you do, say, and think." He didn't say this to be dark or morbid. He said it to wake himself up, to sharpen his mind, to cut through the illusion that tomorrow is guaranteed. And that's exactly what we need today. Because if you truly understood that this might be your last sunrise, would you really spend it scrolling through strangers' opinions? Would you waste it replaying regrets? Would you give your energy to arguments, distractions, and noise? Or would you live fully, deliberately, with presence, urgency, and peace? Most people don't think about death until it shows up close, a diagnosis, an accident, a funeral. That's when the mind finally quiets. That's when the distractions stop feeling important, and for a moment, clarity returns. But then, life picks up again, and they forget. The Stoic doesn't forget. The Stoic keeps death close, not to fear it, but to use it as a lens, as a compass, as a filter for what matters and what doesn't. Because when you remember that your time is limited, you stop wasting it. You stop tolerating what drains you. You stop postponing what calls to you. You stop living on autopilot, and you start living on purpose. This doesn't mean becoming reckless. It means becoming real. It means realizing that every moment is sacred, not because it's glamorous, but because it's finite. You may not get another conversation with that person. You may not get another chance to fix that mistake. You may not wake up tomorrow with the same strength or health or opportunity. And so you live with presence, you speak with honesty, you love without delay, you work with focus, not because you fear dying, but because you've chosen to honor living. Think about your average day. How much of it is spent on things that would mean nothing if this were your last week? How much of your mental energy is consumed by things that would vanish the moment death tapped you on the shoulder? What if instead you started each morning with the question, if this was my final day, how would I live it? Not in fantasy, but in alignment, in clarity, in truth. You'd probably be more selective with your words, more present with the people you love, less tolerant of drama, more generous with your time, but only to things that matter. You'd create, you'd connect, you'd move with urgency, not stress, with gratitude, not entitlement. This is not about fearing the end, it's about fearing wasted time. Because time is the one thing you cannot earn back. Money, reputation, even opportunity, they come and go. But time, once spent, is gone forever. And the tragedy isn't that we die. The tragedy is that most people never truly live before they do. Marcus Aurelius didn't live in fear of death. He ruled, wrote, led, and reflected, all with the awareness that his life was temporary. That made him precise, compassionate, strong. It didn't rob him of joy. It gave him the framework to savor it more deeply. And that's the paradox. The more you embrace death, the more alive you become. You stop floating. You start grounding. You stop trying to be everywhere and start being fully here. So if death knocked on your door tonight, what unfinished truth would it find? What words have you left unsaid? What dreams have you still put on hold? And most importantly, what would you regret giving your time to? You have a choice. You can keep pretending you'll always have more time, or you can start living like it matters now, because it does. 5. You're stronger than you think. You've been through more than you admit, faced more than you let on, survived moments that would have broken a weaker version of you. But because you didn't collapse publicly, because you didn't scream or bleed or beg for help, the world never saw the war. They just saw you keep walking, breathing, smiling maybe, working, functioning. But inside, you know, you were in pieces. And still, you showed up. That alone makes you powerful. But you don't feel powerful, do you? You've learned to minimize your strength, to explain away your resilience. You've trained yourself to think, it wasn't that bad, or I got lucky, or it could have been worse. You wear humility like armor, but sometimes it turns into self-doubt. Sometimes it blinds you to the truth that inside you lives something unshakable, something ancient, something built to endure storms that haven't even arrived yet. Marcus Aurelius lived in constant pressure, wars, betrayal, sickness, the weight of ruling the world's most powerful empire, and still he reminded himself, you have power over your mind, not outside events. Realize this, and you will find strength. That's not poetic, that's foundational. Because the only strength that can never be taken from you is the strength you command inside your own mind. You may not control what life throws at you, but you do control how you stand in it, whether you curl up or lean in, whether you collapse under pressure or let it sharpen your edges. But here's the catch. Real strength rarely feels like strength in the moment. It feels like silence, like heaviness in your chest, like showing up even when no one sees it, like doing the right thing while your hands shake, like walking forward even when you're terrified. That's what inner power looks like. It's not loud, it's not proud, it's quiet, composed, rooted. Too often we confuse strength with confidence, with a polished appearance, with loud speeches and powerful poses. But strength, true strength, is what holds you steady when there's no audience, no reward, and no clarity. When everything feels uncertain, and still, you choose not to break. The truth is, you have no idea how strong you are until life forces you to find out. You don't discover resilience through reading about it. You discover it in the dark nights, in the phone call that changes everything, in the loss you didn't think you could survive, in the rejection that burned your pride, in the failure that made you doubt your worth. And yet, here you are, still listening, still learning, still seeking to grow. That's not weakness, that's not fragility, that's power. The Stoics teach us to reinterpret adversity, not as punishment, but as proof. When something hard enters your life, don't ask, "Why is this happening to me?" Ask, "What part of me is this trying to awaken?" That shift alone can change your entire reality. Because pain is not the enemy. Pain is a mirror. It reflects your gaps, your patterns, your illusions. But it also reflects your grit. It reveals the muscle you didn't know you had. And when you stop seeing pain as a sign of failure and start seeing it as a sign of transformation, you stop running. You start listening. You start adapting. You start rising. You are more capable than your past believes, more resilient than your failures suggest, more stable than your emotions admit. And the longer you walk this path, choosing discipline, choosing awareness, choosing truth, the stronger that core becomes. Until one day, something happens, and you don't flinch, you don't spiral, you don't collapse, you respond calmly, clearly, consciously, and that moment will surprise you. You'll wonder, "How did I handle that so well?" And the answer will be simple, because you've been training, quietly, for years. Through all the small decisions no one applauded. Through all the pain you refused to let define you. Through all the mornings you showed up, even when your heart felt heavy. That's how warriors are built, in silence. The people who inspire you most, the calm, grounded ones, the unshakable ones, they weren't born that way. They were forged, and you're being forged too. Not by ease, but by experience, by hardship, by your refusal to surrender to what hurts. So next time you feel overwhelmed, next time you doubt your capacity to endure, pause, breathe, remind yourself, "I've been here before, I've felt like breaking before, and I didn't. I bent, I shook, but I didn't break." You're not as fragile as you've been led to believe. You're not defined by your weakest moments. You're defined by your response to them. And every time you rise, even if your rise is slow, even if it's messy, you reinforce something unshakable, something no one can give you, and no one can take away. So don't ask if you're strong enough. You already are. Now it's just time to remember. 6. You are rising for the work of humankind. There's a deeper reason you wake up with a strange fire in your chest, a silent push that tells you, keep going. It's not just ambition, it's not just personal growth. It's the quiet pull of purpose trying to remind you that your life is not just yours, that your talents are not ornaments, they're tools, and that your pain, your perspective, your discipline, they all matter more than you think, not just for you, but for the world. Marcus Aurelius, Emperor of Rome and philosopher of the soul, wrote, "At dawn, when you have trouble getting out of bed, tell yourself, I have to go to work. As a human being, I'm rising to do the work of humankind." He wasn't speaking metaphorically. He believed, truly, that every man is part of a greater whole, that to live only for yourself is to shrink your own spirit, and that your duty, your reason for rising each morning, is to contribute to something bigger than your ego. But in today's world, we're taught the opposite. Everything is built around the self, self-image, self-success, self-expression, self-worth. We're told to chase individual greatness, to become something, to outdo, outshine, outperform. But the paradox is this. The more you obsess over self, the more isolated you feel, and the more isolated you feel, the more meaningless your victories become. You weren't made to chase validation. You weren't built to impress. You were designed to serve, quietly, powerfully, and with intention. Not as a martyr, not as someone who sacrifices their dreams, but as someone who understands this one truth. Your gifts don't belong to you. They belong to what you give them to. Maybe you have a talent for leadership, for teaching, for building, for listening, for creating. Maybe you've overcome something that broke others. Maybe your pain carved out empathy that no textbook could ever give you. That is not coincidence. That is your assignment. That is the raw material of your purpose. The world needs what you've developed in the dark, but only if you're willing to offer it with your whole heart. And that's the work of humankind, to rise and give, not because the world notices, but because it needs you, even if it never says so. The Stoics didn't believe in chasing glory. They believed in showing up, in doing the work without applause, in leaving things better than they found them, not because someone told them to, but because virtue demanded it. Because character isn't about being seen, it's about being useful. That means you don't wait until you feel inspired. You don't wait until someone validates your voice. You don't wait until the world is ready. You start now. You show up with what you have. You speak truth when it's easier to stay silent. You serve others, even when you're still figuring yourself out. That's how purpose grows. Through action, through contribution, through giving without expectation. And yes, there will be days when you wonder if any of it matters. Days when the world feels deaf, when your efforts feel invisible. But those are the moments when you must remember, your life is planting seeds. And some seeds don't sprout for years. Some never show their fruits where you can see them. But that doesn't mean the tree isn't growing somewhere, silently, because of you. When you start rising for the work of humankind, your energy shifts. You stop asking, "What do I get from this?" and start asking, "Who gets better because I exist?" That question, if you let it, will change how you speak, how you show up, and how you carry your own pain. You realize that every struggle you endure becomes a manual for someone else, that your discipline becomes a mirror for someone who's lost, that your consistency gives someone else permission to keep going, that your honesty lights a path for others who've been walking in the dark. And no, you may not see it, but that doesn't mean it's not happening. We live in an age of visibility, of likes, shares, and applause, but the deepest work is still invisible, quiet, relentless, unseen, and that's exactly why it matters, because what you build in silence becomes the foundation others stand on. So don't underestimate the weight of your daily effort. Don't diminish the value of your words just because they don't go viral. Don't stop offering your gifts just because no one claps yet. Offer them because that's who you are. You're not just a man chasing goals. You're a vessel of strength, of clarity, of wisdom that was born in hardship. And the more you live with that awareness, the less the noise of the world can distract you. Ask yourself now, if I disappeared tomorrow, what part of the world would be worse off because I wasn't here to give what only I can give? What part of my life am I still treating like it's mine to hide when it was meant to be given? Because when you stop living only for yourself, you don't disappear. You expand. You grow into something bigger than your fear, bigger than your pain, bigger than the life you thought you were building, and into the life you were born to live. You are rising not just for your own greatness, but for the work of humankind. 7. Never complain. Complaining is seductive. It makes you feel momentarily powerful, like you're standing up for yourself, like you're demanding justice, like you're speaking truth. But look closer. Behind the noise, the sighs, the sarcastic remarks, and the long emotional rants, what really changes? Nothing. You feel a little release. The people around you nod or roll their eyes. But the problem remains, and now you're drained, distracted, and still exactly where you were before you opened your mouth. That's why the Stoics were merciless with complaint. Marcus Aurelius reminded himself, "Don't be overheard complaining, not even to yourself." Think about that, not even to yourself. Because complaint, even when it stays inside your mind, weakens you. It shifts your attention from action to helplessness, from responsibility to resentment, from movement to murmuring. And the deeper danger is that complaining feels like doing something. You tell yourself that expressing your frustration is productive, that venting is healthy, but most of the time, it's not. It's a substitute for what really needs to happen: clarity, courage, and action. There are only two logical responses to any situation: change it or accept it. Anything else is noise. Anything else is ego. If you can fix the problem, fix it. If you can't, adjust your mindset. But to sit in between those two paths, repeating your frustrations, rehashing your disappointments, replaying your wounds, that's a slow spiritual decay, one that makes you weaker every time you indulge it. Think about the people you respect most, the calm, grounded ones, the ones who command a room without speaking loudly. They don't complain, not because their life is easy, but because they understand something deeper. Complaint is wasted energy, and energy is sacred. We all know someone who drains the air out of every room with their negativity. They list everything that's wrong, everything that's unfair, everything they've suffered. And yet, when you look at their life, nothing changes. That's not a coincidence. That's a pattern, a habit of powerlessness disguised as honesty. And make no mistake, complaining is a habit, a mental reflex, one that must be retrained, rewired, replaced. So what do you do instead? You begin by noticing it. Every time you feel the urge to vent, pause. Ask yourself, am I about to solve this or just complain about it? That single pause creates space. Space to think, to reflect, to redirect. Then identify the truth. What's really bothering you? Is it the situation or your expectation of how it should be? Most frustration doesn't come from what is, but from the gap between reality and our fantasy of what reality should be. When you accept life on its own terms, not as punishment, but as fact, you gain something priceless: clarity. And clarity kills complaint. Now turn inward. Ask, what can I control? Because the Stoic doesn't avoid pain. He avoids useless pain. He doesn't chase perfection. He aims for virtue. And virtue begins when you stop blaming the world for your emotional state. Maybe you're tired, overwhelmed, disrespected, undervalued. Okay, then what are you going to do about it? Will you change your schedule? Will you communicate with more honesty? Will you raise your standards? Or will you simply repeat the same complaint tomorrow and the next day until it becomes your identity? That's the real cost. Complaint rewrites how you see yourself. You stop being the hero of your story and become its victim. You narrate your life like a tragedy, even when you're holding the pen. And the longer you live in that mindset, the harder it becomes to escape it, because you start finding meaning in the misery, comfort in the complaint, a strange kind of safety in the belief that the world is always against you. But here's the truth: most people aren't against you. Most systems aren't rigged. Most obstacles aren't personal. Life is just life. It's hard. It's messy. It doesn't care about your plans. And once you stop expecting it to, you free yourself to start building instead of blaming. Complaining also robs you of your voice. The more you speak without action, the less your words mean. You train yourself to talk instead of move. You give up your credibility in exchange for momentary release. But silence, when it comes from strength, not fear, is powerful. When you stop complaining, your presence changes. People listen more closely. Your words carry weight because they're rare, and because they come from a place of responsibility, not resentment. So let this be your new practice. The next time you feel yourself complaining, pause, reflect, decide, either act or accept, then move on, with grace, with purpose, with power. And if you need to speak, speak with solutions, speak with clarity, speak with the intention to move forward, not to stay stuck. Because your life is too short and your mind too powerful to waste on circular thoughts and recycled grievances. You weren't built to echo complaints. You were built to break patterns. So ask yourself, am I complaining because I'm powerless, or am I powerless because I keep complaining? Because the answer to that question may be the difference between staying where you are and becoming who you're meant to be. 8. You can live happy anywhere. It's a lie we've all bought into at some point, the idea that happiness is waiting for us somewhere else, in another city, another job, another relationship, another version of our body, another season of life. We think, if I could just change my surroundings, then I'd finally feel peace. But what if that's not true? What if your ability to be happy has nothing to do with where you are, and everything to do with how you think? Marcus Aurelius, who spent much of his life on brutal military campaigns, sleeping in tents under cold skies far from comfort, wrote, "A man can live well even in a palace." And what he meant was this: your environment may shape your conditions, but only your mind shapes your experience. That's not just philosophy, that's survival. The reason most people feel trapped isn't because they're in the wrong place. It's because they're in the wrong state of mind. They look around and see limitation. They see boredom, restriction, repetition. But they never stop to ask, what if this isn't a prison? What if it's a training ground? Happiness isn't found in escape. It's found in engagement with the present, with your breath, with the simple act of being aware. When you always chase the next place, you miss the life that's happening right now. You miss the lessons, the silence, the strength that could have been built right where you are, if only you'd chosen to stay. Think about it. How often do people say, "I need to get away," or "If only I lived somewhere else, I'd be happier"? But then they move, and after the rush wears off, they feel the same heaviness. Why? Because they brought their mind with them. They packed their restlessness, their avoidance, their lack of presence, and now they're just suffering in a different setting. The Stoic doesn't seek new places to heal. He seeks a new perspective. This means learning to look at your current life, yes, this exact moment, and ask, what am I not seeing here? What have I taken for granted? What parts of this situation are teaching me something I wouldn't learn anywhere else? Because once you begin to engage with your environment instead of resisting it, something shifts. You stop fighting reality. You stop believing happiness is out there. And you start realizing it's always been here, within. You can live happy anywhere because happiness is built from within, from your morning thoughts, from your ability to appreciate small victories, from your daily discipline, from your decision to treat this life, not a future one, as your training ground for inner peace. Of course, this isn't easy, especially in a world that sells the illusion of elsewhere. Social media shows you paradise locations, luxury lifestyles, exotic adventures. But those images are just pixels. They're marketing. They're designed to make you feel like your life is lacking. But you must remember, your life isn't lacking. You're just not fully present in it. When was the last time you stood still and noticed the sunlight on your face, or heard your breath without judgment, or found beauty in a routine task, cleaning, walking, making coffee? Not because it was glamorous, but because it anchored you in the now. That's the Stoic lens. Not to romanticize hardship, but to extract value from it. Not to pretend your current life is perfect, but to realize it contains everything you need to practice virtue, gratitude, and resilience. And when you internalize that mindset, you become unshakable. You no longer depend on external shifts to feel fulfilled. You no longer fear being stuck because you've learned how to bloom where you are. This doesn't mean you never move, change jobs, or pursue better opportunities. It means you stop chasing happiness through movement alone. You move because it aligns with your values, not because you're running from discomfort. Happiness becomes your constant companion, not a moving target. It's also important to understand that contentment doesn't mean complacency. The Stoic is content with the present, but always reaching for more within himself. He understands that peace doesn't come from the outside in, it comes from the inside out. And once he finds it, he carries it everywhere. This is why you see some people radiate calm even in chaos, while others feel miserable in luxury. One has built peace, the other is searching for it where it doesn't exist. So ask yourself now, what stories are you telling yourself about someday? What happiness have you postponed until the conditions are perfect? And what if the thing you're looking for has been sitting quietly inside your current life all along, waiting for your attention? The mind that can find peace in the ordinary becomes extraordinary. You don't need to escape to feel alive. You need to arrive fully here, now. So whether you're in a small apartment or a crowded city, a mundane job or a quiet season of life, don't overlook it, don't numb it, don't fantasize it away. Instead, ask, what strength can I build here? What clarity can I practice here? What joy is hiding in plain sight if I just stop chasing and start noticing? Because if you can find peace in this moment, in this place, with this life, then you carry something within you that no circumstance can take away, and that's real freedom. 9. Help the common good. In a world obsessed with self, there's something revolutionary about living for something bigger, about contributing, not because it's profitable, but because it's right, about helping, not for credit or applause, but because you know deep down that your life means more when it's not just about you. Marcus Aurelius returned to this truth over and over again. What is not good for the hive is not good for the bee. He understood something modern society is desperately forgetting, that your well-being is inseparably linked to the well-being of others, that no matter how self-sufficient you become, you still belong to something greater than yourself. And yet, we've been taught the opposite. Modern culture tells you to focus on your brand, build your empire, protect your energy, and put yourself first at all costs. And while boundaries and self-respect are essential, when you make your entire life orbit around your own comfort, your world becomes small, isolated, fragile. The irony is this: the more you build a life only for yourself, the more meaningless it feels. Because we weren't designed to be self-contained systems. We were designed to be of service. Not in the shallow, social media-friendly kind of way. Not in staged generosity or public virtue. But in quiet, consistent, unseen contributions. The kind that shape culture without needing credit. The kind that lift others while still holding your own boundaries. The kind that doesn't need to be photographed to be real. That's what the Stoics meant by the common good. It's not about martyrdom, it's about alignment with nature. Nature doesn't hoard, it gives, it circulates. The sun rises without asking for applause. Trees offer oxygen without demanding payment. Rivers nourish whatever they pass. And you have that same capacity to create, to strengthen, to offer something that wasn't there before you showed up. Helping the common good doesn't require grand gestures. It begins in small decisions. How you speak to people when no one's listening. How you treat those who can't offer you anything. Whether you offer your best work, even when the reward is invisible. Whether you choose patience over pride. Listening over ego. Contribution over convenience. It's in how you hold space for a friend who's struggling, even when you're tired. In how you mentor someone without seeking recognition. In how you create systems, ideas, art, or simply energy that lifts the room instead of draining it. But there's a tension here. Helping the common good doesn't always feel good. Sometimes it's thankless. Sometimes it's exhausting. Sometimes it feels like you're giving to a world that doesn't notice, doesn't change, doesn't care. And that's when the ego protests. It says, why bother? What's the point? Let someone else carry the weight. But the Stoic doesn't give based on what the world deserves. He gives based on who he is. He doesn't ask, will they repay me? He asks, will I be proud of who I was in this moment? Because your integrity isn't measured by your rewards. It's measured by your alignment, whether you're living in accordance with the values you claim to believe. And that's where real fulfillment is born. Not in attention, but in action. Not in legacy, but in consistency. When you know that something got better today because of you, there's a quiet peace in that. A sense of purpose that outlasts mood, praise, and even results. Helping the common good also protects you from the trap of self-centered suffering. When you're constantly thinking about your own problems, they become massive, consuming. But the moment you serve someone else, perspective returns. You realize others are suffering too, that your pain isn't unique. That your strength can be useful to someone who's not as far along. And in that realization, your own healing begins. The Stoic understands this. That service isn't just a moral obligation. It's a form of psychological strength. It gets you out of your head, out of your spiral, into action, into meaning. So how do you live this in a world that's so self-absorbed? You don't have to preach it. Just be it. Be the man who returns the cart, who doesn't need to be thanked, who follows through, who lifts others even when his hands are full, who does excellent work not because someone is watching, but because he is watching. Let your life be a quiet example of what it looks like to serve something beyond ego, beyond status, beyond self. And yes, help wisely. You are not the world's savior. Don't drain yourself trying to fix everything, but do recognize this. Your strength, your clarity, your presence, they're not just gifts, they're responsibilities. So ask yourself now, what am I doing today that contributes to the world beyond me? Where am I hiding behind self-care when what I really need is to be useful? How would I live if I knew my worth wasn't in what I get? But in what I give. Because in the end, what you build for yourself dies with you, but what you give to others becomes legacy. 10. Be grateful for your blessings. We are surrounded by abundance, yet blinded by comparison. Blessed beyond measure, yet too distracted to notice. Every morning we wake up with breath in our lungs, food in reach, access to clean water, freedom of thought. And still, we complain. We chase. We scroll. We envy. Not because we lack, but because we've stopped seeing what we have. Marcus Aurelius warned against this blindness centuries ago. In Meditations, he wrote, "Do not indulge in dreams of having what you do not, but reckon up the chief of the blessings you do possess, and then thankfully remember how you would crave for them if they were not yours." That's the practice, to step outside of your mind's constant hunger and instead become aware of your soul's quiet fullness, to look around and realize, I have what someone else is praying for, right now, at this very moment. But gratitude isn't just about listing blessings, it's about how you relate to them. Most people only feel grateful when something is new, rare, or at risk of being taken away. But real gratitude, the Stoic kind, is built on presence, not novelty. It's noticing the sunlight through your window and remembering not everyone sees another day. It's hearing the laughter of someone you love and knowing this moment won't last forever. It's sipping a cup of warm coffee and realizing that peace doesn't have to be big to be real. You see, the reason most people can't feel joy is because they've trained their minds to seek more before honoring what is. They think, once I get that promotion, that house, that relationship, that number in the bank, then I'll be grateful. But they don't realize. The habit of chasing doesn't disappear when you reach your goal. It just moves the finish line. And so they run faster, harder, always searching for the next reason to be satisfied. Meanwhile, life is happening, quietly, beautifully, and they're missing it. Gratitude is the antidote to this disease of discontent, not as a motivational trick, but as a daily mental discipline. It's how the Stoic trains his perspective, not to be naive or passive, but to be anchored, anchored in what is real, what is already here, what cannot be bought, but must be noticed. But here's the truth. Gratitude takes strength. It's easier to complain. It's easier to focus on what's missing. It takes no effort to be dissatisfied, but to look at your current life, with all its imperfections, challenges, and unanswered questions, and still say, I am thankful. That's a kind of spiritual power, a grounded maturity that few develop, because it requires slowing down and paying attention. And that's the first step. Attention. Gratitude begins where distraction ends. If your mind is always somewhere else, some future version of your life, how can you possibly feel thankful now? So start small, in the morning, before your phone, before the world invades your thoughts. Sit still, breathe, and ask, what do I already have that I would miss if it were gone? Let that guide your choices, your energy, your tone, because when you begin your day with recognition, you don't move from lack, you move from sufficiency, and in that space you work harder, not because you're trying to fill a void, but because you're honoring the gifts you've been given. You love more deeply, not because you're afraid to lose, but because you see the fleeting beauty in what you have. You create, not for validation, but as an expression of appreciation. Gratitude transforms how you move through the world. It also guards your spirit. In hard times, gratitude is a shield, not from pain, but from despair. It reminds you, yes, this is difficult, but not everything is broken. It allows you to hold joy and grief in the same hands, to suffer without becoming bitter, to struggle without forgetting what's still good. And perhaps most importantly, gratitude shifts your identity. You stop being someone who complains about life. You become someone who honors it. And when you live that way, people notice. They feel something different in you. A steadiness, a calm strength. Because gratitude is magnetic. It pulls your attention away from what the world wants you to want and toward what your soul already has. So ask yourself now, what are you overlooking today because you've labeled it normal? What blessings have you normalized to the point where they feel invisible? What would shake you to your core if it suddenly disappeared? Your health, your family, your ability to think, speak, move, create, the chance to begin again. Every breath is a gift. Every moment is a window. And every window will one day close. That is not meant to sadden you. It is meant to wake you up. Because once you understand that life is limited, you stop needing more to feel thankful. You start needing less. You start walking slower, hugging tighter, speaking softer. Not because you're weak, but because you finally realize how rich you already are. So live today like someone who knows what they have. Not with fear, but with fullness. Because the man who practices gratitude isn't just happier, he's unshakable. You don't need a new life, you need a new lens. That's what Marcus Aurelius gave us. Not rules to obey, but reminders to return to. Anchors for when the world gets loud. Tools for when the mind gets lost. And now, in a time of constant noise, endless comparison and craving without clarity. His voice matters more than ever. Ignore what others are doing. Think for yourself. Do less, but do it with presence. Remember death not to fear it, but to awaken life. Recognize your strength, not someday, but now. Serve something greater than your ego. Refuse to complain. Find peace where you are. Give without needing credit. And above all, be deeply, fiercely, relentlessly grateful. Not because life is perfect, but because it's yours. These aren't just teachings. They're a way of being. A way of returning to your center when the world tries to pull you in a thousand directions. You don't need to master all of them today. Just one. Just enough to shift. To pause. To begin walking, not blindly, but consciously. So before this episode ends, take one moment, one breath, and ask yourself, which truth do I need most right now? Then carry it with you, in silence, in discipline, in stillness. Not for others, for you, because your path is waiting, and it's not paved with noise, it's built with practice.